time to time, passing a driving test or professional examinations, whatever they are. There's a lot of pressure on you when you're facing a test, right? There's a lot of pressure on you when you're facing a test. And the people around you, when you're facing those tests, the people who love you, obviously they want to see you do well. They want to help you put in the disciplines that you need to give you the space and the time to do your studies and be prepared. You want to be a help to people who are going through some kind of a test. And what I want to say to you from verse 10, for the first three verses here, is that Paul is showing his concern that these Christians also would do well in the tests that they're facing. He wants them to be strong. He wants them to be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. He wants to see the church blessed. And he tells them how they can be strong. He tells them very practically what they can do. Put on the full armor of God. That's what they've got to do. Put on the full armor of God. And the reason why must they do this? Why will they need this strength? Because he's calling them to stand. He's calling them to stand. Put on the whole armor that you may be able to stand against the devil's schemes in the evil day. There's a test coming for God's people. And his desire is that they should be strong when that test comes. That they'll be equipped and ready when the test comes. He wants them to pass the test. And the way to do that? Trust God. Trust God. You will pass this test. As we go down to verse 14 through to 17, he has been listing the kind of qualities that he can see they will need if they're going to pass the test. If you're doing a physics exam, there are certain equations you've got to learn, certain principles that you've got to digest and understand. Otherwise, you won't pass the test. And in the same way, there are things that they have got to get a hold of and grasp and understand and practice and be confident in if they're going to overcome the test that life is bringing their ways. You know, these are not ordinary tests. Christians face particular kinds of tests that other people don't face. And the only way to pass these tests is by godliness. Godliness. That is the equipment we need to pass the Christian test, the test that we come across as a Christian in the Christian life. He's not helping them just to get a job, though we thank God you've recently got a job. He's not helping them just to pass their driving test, although that's a great thing to do. He's not just helping them pass their GCSEs, although that's excellent, or your end of term exams. All that is good. These are the life tests. The life tests. And for that to pass, they're going to need truth. They're going to have a firm grip on the truth. They're going to need righteousness if they're going to pass these tests. They're going to need faith if they're going to pass the test. They're going to need salvation to pass the test. They're going to need God's word. They're going to need all these things. They're going to need to be godly if they're going to pass the test. So I think the first thing I've got to say is that Christian life has unique tests. And godliness is how God equips us to pass those tests. So as we go on to verse 18 through to 24, he shows how godliness, like learning physics, doesn't come by magic. There are very few people, in fact, I don't think there's anybody, who kind of is born with an inherent knowledge of how to, I can't even think of some example from physics because I don't know enough. Give me an example somewhere. The three laws of Newton's laws of motion. Thank you for that example. I was thinking of the laws of thermodynamics or something like that. You're not born with this inherent knowledge. You have to learn it. People are not born godly. You have to learn it. And you have to practice it. So how are we going to become godly? If you go to the physics books to learn your physics stuff for your physics exam, how are we going to... Paul tells us in verse 18 through 24, we're going to have to pray. We have to pray. That's how we're going to lay hold of godliness and draw it down into our lives and the lives of the people around us through prayer, real prayer. So this passage we're looking at this evening, verse 18, tells us how to pray. And if you're looking at verse 18 and 19, it tells us who to pray for. And then in verses 19 through to 24, what to pray for. What kind of things can we pray? How to pray, who to pray for, what to pray for. So in verse 18, we're looking at how to pray. He says, praying at all times, in the Spirit, with all prayer and supplication. To that end, keep alert with all perseverance, making supplication. How often do you pray? How often do you pray? Paul clearly sees the Christians praying a lot. That is a big part of the Christian life. Prayer is a big part of a Christian's life. Why is there this urgency to pray? Because the test is coming. The test is coming. So they have to take the matter of prayer seriously if that's how they're going to lay hold of the godly they need to pass. If there's an exam coming up, a person would be concerned if they saw the person who's about to face that exam paying no interest in the books, not sitting up late and putting extra time in. You'd be concerned, wouldn't you, that somebody's taking a casual attitude as if somehow they're going to walk it. Tests are tough. That's the very nature of a test, isn't it? Now, we can't spend our whole time in prayer. He says, praying at all times. You can't spend all your time praying. There are things to do. There are other things we have to do. But I think he's talking about laying hold of godliness. And he is saying that though we may not be able to spend all our time praying, when we are praying, godliness must always be a concern. There's never going to be a time in your life or my life where my godliness and the godliness of people around me is not going to be an issue. It will always be a very important issue in all of our lives. So he's not just talking about the amount of time that we spend, but he also goes on to talk about the attitude we spend, the attitude we have of heart to our life of prayer as well, praying specifically about this issue. He says, pray in the Spirit. Pray in the Spirit. When you hear somebody going, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Do you know that that isn't the Spirit? Do you know that person hasn't put their heart and soul into their prayers? Do you know that they're not investing faith into what they're doing and confidence towards God when you're muttering and murmuring your way through? It's not the Spirit. The Spirit is doing it from your hearts, meaning it, realizing that you need godliness. It's not just a matter of, oh, well, if I get it, I get it. If I don't, I don't. You can't be casual. It's a deep concern for the Christian to live worthy of the gospel. A deep concern. It's not just about the amount of time or the attitude of prayer. It's an understanding as well of what prayer involves, that prayer actually is a very rich thing. He says all kinds of prayer. Do you see that? All kinds of prayer. I don't know how you pray. I don't know what your prayer life is like necessarily. But I know there's lots of ways to pray. I don't know how you all pray. Sometimes you can just open the Bible and sit down there and say, Lord, please teach me from your word. And you go prayerfully to the Bible and you ask the Lord to teach you from his word. You listen to what he's saying to you and teaching you and showing you. That's prayer. Sometimes you're taking a bit of the Bible that you've read, and especially if it's really touched on something in your life and it's made you realize perhaps you have a particular need, you go to God and said, look, here I've read this. Lord, help me to be what this is laying out to be. And you pray the Bible back to God. Sometimes you're just praising. There's times, aren't there? I don't know, in your prayer life, do you think that counts as prayer? When you're just talking to God and just as the Americans say, loving on him. Have you ever heard the Americans say that? Loving on God. Just spending time praising God. Just being full of his glories and his attributes and his grace and thanking him for who he is. That's prayer. I don't know about you, but there are times where all I do in my prayer time is just unburden myself and tell God my troubles and tell God what I'm struggling with and just pour out my heart. There's other times where I confess, when I realize I've been caught and like there's nowhere else to run. You can't run from God. You have to just put up your hands and say, here I am, Lord, guilty as charged. Be merciful to me. Help me move on from this place. Prayer, all kinds of prayer. As the quiet prayers you pray, it's almost like a whisper, whispering almost into his very ear. There's other times when you're praying and you pray out loud so other people can hear you. Sometimes you can find, I don't know if you've done this, you've gone out and you've tried to find a quiet place where there's nobody around and you've lifted up your voice unto heaven and you haven't held back. There's all different ways to pray. You can pray in absolute silence. Nobody can hear you. God can. Sometimes your prayers will be quick as a flash. You think of the book of Nehemiah. He shot up a prayer to God like firing an arrow. There are some people we know who can pray for a very, very, very long time. They pray and pray and pray and pray. And sometimes people pray and suddenly it's time for dinner. And their stomach's starting to rumble. They're starting to get hungry. But godliness at that moment means more than food. And they fast and they pray. And they press on in prayer because they want to pass the test. There are lots of different ways to pray. Sometimes perhaps your prayers are just songs. You know, maybe they're hymns or something that you know or songs. And you're just singing to the Lord in worship. Whatever, whatever. Just make sure you pray. Pray. It's praying on your own. Nobody else here. You and God. And then there's those times where you just grab hold of somebody's hand and say, would you pray with me? And you're praying with a friend. And they pray with you. Sometimes you get a group together. Let's all pray. And you join in prayer like that. Or occasionally you go to a prayer meeting. A whole service set apart just for prayer. Whatever. Pray. Make prayer and all a central part of your life. We need prayer. And yes, good to have prayer that's full of praise. Yes, it's good to have prayer. It's full of acceptance of God's will and thankfulness. But here's one thing that Paul underlines. Make sure when you pray, don't forget to also ask God. All supplications. That's what supplication means, to ask God for something. Don't go praying and forget to actually ask him. And in this context, what is he really wanting them to ask as a priority? Change me. Make me more godly. Less of me, more of you in my life. Ask. You know, praying itself is a godly thing to do. It's a godly thing to do in and of itself. But it is for godliness itself that we must pray. And that's got to be there in our prayer life our whole life long. Our whole life long. Praying from our hearts because we need godliness. We need it. We need truth. We need righteousness. We need to be ready. We need salvation. We need the Spirit. We need the Spirit. We need to be godly. So Paul goes on to that end, and he begins to tell us the purpose of all this. You've got to keep alert. It's so easy to become complacent about this. You start to accept that this is just how I am. Have you ever told yourself that when you're struggling with godliness? This is just how I am. And I'm just getting used to this is how I am. And everybody else is going to have to get used to it too. Even God. But don't. It says with all perseverance, stick at it. Don't give up on this all-important subject. If you're like me, you get frustrated with your own progress. If you're like me, you get frustrated by the setbacks. You seem to, like on the snakes and ladders board, you seem to go up so well, and the next minute you're sliding back down the bottom. Don't give up. Don't give up. Persevere. Make supplications. Keep asking God. Knock, it shall be opened. Seek, and you shall find. Ask, it shall be given to you. We need godliness. We need godliness because we need godliness if we're going to stand. And if we don't stand, we're going to fall. The test will come. We will fail. So if godliness equips us to pass life's test, my second point, we must pray for it. We must pray for it. So, who needs godliness that we should be praying? Verse 18 and 19, who needs it? It says, for all the saints and also for me. All the saints and also for me. And I think we can approach this two different ways. We need to pray for other people's godliness. We need to pray for other people's godliness. And we need other people to pray for ours. There's another approach we can take to this. It's that the saints need to pray for their ministers, and the ministers need to pray for the saints. So there's two different approaches. So taking that first one, you need to pray for me, I need to pray for you. Not one or the other, both. We all need prayer. You see, sitting in a room like this, depending on where you're sitting, you can see different people. And from where you're standing or where you're sitting, you can see other people. And maybe as you look around, you can see a person's need of godliness. Maybe you can see an area in their life and you just think, I love brother so-and-so, I love brother or sister so-and-so. But they're a little bit ungodly in this area. Pray. Pray. God has shown you something. Pray. Isn't it the first instinct to do something or say something? How about pray something? Pray for other people's godliness. What we can't do, mustn't do, is ignore what we can see or think it doesn't matter. Paul wants us to pray. Pray about the ungodliness you see. But here's the danger. If you're busy taking the speck out of your brother's eye, you may forget there's a rather large plank in your own. You need prayer too. So, if we're going to try and avoid some of these misunderstandings that can spring up when we just see something and we think we understand a situation, wouldn't it be great if not just observing one another and thinking I can see a need and I want to pray for that need, wouldn't it be great if we all volunteered and told each other our prayer needs so that we actually could hear from each other what we need prayer for to avoid kind of misunderstandings about such things? You see, Paul is telling them what his prayer needs are. He tells them what he needs prayer for because he wants them to pray. He needs godliness, and he wants to be very specific about the areas where he's weak. So we have a perspective, don't we, on our own needs. Perhaps you're very conscious of your own needs for godliness. How about asking people around you to pray for those things? So pray for ungodliness in others and make sure you're getting prayer for yourself. For yourself, because this is really important. Really important. How about saints and ministers? I think there's a natural bent towards praying for one or praying for the other. Either we only pray for the sheep, as it were, because boy, don't they need it, because if they were anything, if they were strong, they wouldn't be sheep, they'd be shepherds. But Paul doesn't call them sheep here. He calls them saints. Saints. Can you hear the value that he places on these people in the life of the church? Saints. He loves these people, reveres these people, respects these people, cares for these people. You know, sometimes one of the privileges of being a pastor is you get to know people, some sides of their life that perhaps they're more private to others. And you get to see some of the struggles that they deal with on a day-to-day basis and the things that they achieve in their day-to-day lives. And it fills you with admiration to see what the Lord is doing in ordinary people's lives. Saints. Saints. Being a sheep is not a second class, or a saint is not a second class. The difference between sheep and shepherds is that it's about who's called. It's just about who's called. And that's just to do with God's own sovereign purposes and plans. There are some mighty sheep. Some mighty sheep. And the whole labor of the shepherd is for the sake of the sheep. To teach them, to train them, to build them up, to encourage them and give them resources. And therefore, how important it is that ministers pray for the saints. Because what we do here together is a couple of hours on a Sunday, or if I'm in full flow, several hours on a Sunday, and maybe a couple of times during the week. But the rest of the time, the ministry of the gospel is taking place all over the place, in all these different circumstances where you all find yourselves and the things you do day to day. That's where the Lord is working and ministering. And you need prayer. Because you get tested, don't you? And you get tempted. And you get distracted. And you get discouraged. And you get attacked. You need godliness. And you could say to yourself, well, the ministers, they're fine. They're fine. They're not exposed to all that sort of stuff. And anyway, they're so holy. They're super saints. They don't need our prayers. How very untrue. The other side of it, the other mistake would be just to say we're only going to pray for our ministers. Our big need to pray is pray for godly ministers. Because they stick their heads over the parapet. They take the risks. They have to do all this work with people in the difficult phases of their life. They've got such weighty decisions to make. They become a target for the devil. If you want to attack an army, take out the officers. And all the preaching. Preaching. How do they do that? They need our prayers. We saints, we're okay. We just turn up to church on Sundays. We put something in the collection. We keep our heads down while they do all the work. I think if that was your attitude, you'd need prayer. I'm not sure. That's entirely godly. But there is a concern, isn't there, for ministers? If there are scandals. Oftentimes, the scandals are down to the ungodliness of ministers. They produce scandals. When the leader fails and the leader falls, then it's felt that the church in somehow has been brought into disrepute. And people can tell themselves, if I fail, if I fall, if members of the church fail and fall, well, that's normal. Well, that's what we are. We're weak and they're strong. All that is so, so untrue. This desire for godliness, this encouragement to pray for godliness, is a prayer for godliness from everybody, from the most backslidden Christian Ephesian to the Apostle Paul himself. We all have this need. We all have this need. So pray for the godliness of all, because we all get tested. You get tested. I get tested. Ministers and saints all get tested. Finally and lastly, what shall we pray? What shall we pray? We've said we're going to pray for godliness. We're talking about praying for godliness. And verse 19 through 24, he gets a bit more specific. The first thing he highlights is his own need to be a bold preacher of the gospel. And we expect that, I trust, of ministers that they would boldly proclaim the gospel. To use the sword, to wield the sword. Do you need boldness to proclaim the gospel? Do you need confidence and strength to talk about Christ and to share the Bible with people around you? Is it only ministers that need this boldness and ability? I think we all need prayer for this. And we'll note that Paul describes himself as an ambassador in chains. He's not got a pulpit in a church. He's in prison. He's in a very, very difficult situation. And I think we can tell ourselves sometimes, I can't preach the gospel. I can't be effective with the gospel of with the word of God because my situation won't allow it. I'm not in a good enough position to do it. This isn't for me. If Paul is asking for boldness, the reason he's asking for boldness is trying to preach the gospel in that prison cell is obviously frightening and very hard. That's why he wants prayer. And the truth is, sharing Christ does make you, it is troubling, it's difficult to do. We all need God's help, don't we, to do these things. We all need boldness and wisdom and opportunity to communicate God's message. And it's an essential part of godliness. We said that this morning. To use the sword. To use the sword. So we need prayer for this, don't we? And of course, ministers particularly need prayer because they're serving you on a regular basis. But I think as we go on, we see finally that sharing our faith with others is not the whole story. Sharing our faith with others is not the whole story. Whether it's sharing it with believers or unbelievers, it's not the whole story. Why? Because our life is not just our ministry. You and me, we all have real lives, real relationships, real struggles, practical difficulties. Paul has a life. He speaks, doesn't he, of how he's going to send Tychicus with news of how he is and what he's doing. Are we always the same every single day? Is our situation static all the time? Are you always doing great? Is every situation you face a walk in the park? Our lives, all of us, are changing all the time. You have a life. You've got a heart, you've got desires, you've got passions and ambitions and hopes like every other human being. So if we're going to pray for each other effectively, we need to know a little bit about how you're all doing. Not just your spiritual struggles or your Christian opportunities, but are you ill? Have you just got a promotion? What are the changes? How are you doing and what's happening in your life? In short, communicate. Communicate. There's a danger, and this happens, especially when people get into trouble. They go to ground. They go quiet. They go off the radar. You don't hear any news. And the only thing you can pray is, oh, Lord, please make them a bit more open about what they're going through. Because they don't tell you. Be open about how you are and how you're doing and what you're doing. Communicate. Paul is making a point. He's sending Tychicus for the express reason to let them know how he is doing, to share some news. He's doing it as a man. He's doing it as a minister. And we've got to do that too. We can leave people just to observe our lives and scratch their heads and wonder, is this what's going on? I wonder what's going on. You know, there's something called Christian paranoia, where you're trying to second guess and read what's going on in everybody else's lives. If people are communicating, if they're open, how much more useful prayer there can be. Why not volunteer your needs and give people your news? Lastly, do you feel that it's appropriate to tell everything to everybody? I don't. I really don't. But I do think it's a good idea to tell some people, godly people who can pray for you and encourage you and will be able to take things on. We're talking about godliness, aren't we? So let me just say this. The armor is a checklist for us of things perhaps it'd be good to consider about our spiritual welfare that we can share with other people and vice versa. The belt of truth, truth. Are you struggling with truth in some way, shape, or form? Is the truth of the gospel something you're not sure about for some reason? Why not find somebody to talk to and pray with you about that? Or maybe you're telling lies or living an untruth in some way. Find somebody who can talk to you about that lack of truth in your life and get some prayer. Or righteousness. Are you trying to do it in all your own strength and not trusting Christ's righteousness? Are you trying to be perfect when Christ is the only perfect one? Why not find somebody to talk to who can pray with you about that? Or maybe you're so full of Christ's finished work that you don't think you have to do the right thing yourself because Christ has done it all. We need to do the right thing. And maybe you know you've done things that are wrong and need to put things right. Find somebody you can share it with and get some prayer. Maybe you're struggling with readiness to share the gospel with other people. Maybe you're a bit unwilling, a bit reserved. Perhaps it's in word or perhaps it's in deed. New people come to the church and you instead of feeling rejoicing that the middle wall of partition has come down and people of very different walks to you have been united as one, maybe you're seeing it as a threat because the culture of the church is changing. Why not get some prayer and confess these things and get some prayer? How about faith? Maybe your faith is weak. You've been tested and tried and your faith is weak. Get some prayer. Maybe you've been putting your faith in the wrong things. People, it's so easy to start putting your faith in people or this or money or promotion. How about getting alongside somebody and getting some prayer? Or salvation, Paul talks about. It's easy to hold out on people who've made bad decisions and gone the wrong way and stand there, well, it's all their own fault. We're going to let them solve their problems on their own. How about rolling up your sleeves and remembering God saved you before you'd done a single right thing? Why don't you help them out? Maybe you're struggling with the word. Maybe you're going through the motions. You're struggling to read. You don't feel you understand the Bible and you're not benefiting from it. Why not get alongside and share this as a need and get some prayer? As Paul continues, verses 23 to 24, he tells them he is praying for them. All the things you can tell he's praying for them come out in his final remarks. He wants them to be courageous. He wants them to be at peace. He wants them to be loving and in communion. He wants them to be full of grace and pure. We're hearing the kind of things he prays for them. The truth is, we all get discouraged. Sometimes each one of us loses our peace. Sometimes our love grows cold and we lose communion with the Father and we get detached from Christ. Grace can ebb away in any Christian heart and love can get corrupted. We need prayer. We need prayer. And isn't it good to know that other people are praying for you? We're going to leave it there. We're going to sing something, 5, 6, 7, which is prayer.